Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, July 29, 2015. Ruling SPLM officials are meeting to study the latest IGAD Plus compromise peace proposal for South Sudan.
I think it is unfair on the side of the international community to continue with this moral equivalency between an elected leadership and a rebel movement. I think this is unfair. It actually makes it a very disappointing diplomatic sort of gesture to the people of South Sudan, who have fought so hard to get their own country.
And South Sudanese long-distance runner await decision on whether their country will be allowed to take part in the World Olympics in Brazil.
I believe South Sudan is a powerhouse of athletics, and it has a talent, the best of the talented youth, boys and girls across the country the world has ever produced.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Members of South Sudan's ruling SPLM party met today in Juba and set up three committees to study the IGAD Plus compromise peace deal. The committees have to report back to party leaders on Friday. IGAD Plus is a heavyweight group of international powers, including the United Nations, the African Union, China, the European Union, and the U.S. They released the compromise peace proposal last Friday. It sets an August 17 deadline for government and opposition leaders to reach a deal. Philip Thonaleu has more for VOA from Juba.
Today's meeting, attended by the party's executive, lawmakers, and other top officials, lasted 3 hours. South Sudan Information Minister and senior SPLM official is Michael Makwe.
The meeting decided to set up three committees so that they go and study the provisions of the agreement and come back to report to the plenary on Friday, the 31st at 10 a.m.
Makwe described the three committees to reporters.
The three committees are Committee on Governance, and it is headed by my poor self. The other committee is the Committee on Economic Issues, and it is headed by Awudeng Achwil. And the third committee is on Permanent Ceasefire and Security Arrangements, and it is headed by Comrade Peter Bashir Bandi.
Makwe says committee's members began deliberating today and will continue to meet throughout Thursday. This is the first time the SPLM is meeting to talk about the IGAD Plus peace proposal. In the first, all senior government officials, including opposition politicians allied to the ruling party, attended such meetings. Makwe refused to answer questions from journalists about the decision to exclude other politicians who are not members of the SPLM. Among other power-sharing elements, the IGAD Plus proposal will create the position of the past vice president to be occupied by rebel leader Riek Machar. It also gives the government 53% of the executive positions in the national government. The SPLM in opposition will receive 33%, while the permanent detainees and other political parties each will get 7%. Regarding security arrangements, the mediators propose two separate armies will coexist for a period of 18 months out of the 30-month transition period. After that, the two armies will be melded into one. In addition, the capital Juba will be demilitarized and be known as a special arrangement area. Foreign forces from the United Nations mission in South Sudan and IGAD and the African Union will take charge of Juba security until the end of 30-month interim period. Over the weekend, President Salva Kiir spokesman Atanye Weka Ateng said it will be difficult for the government to accept some of the proposals in the compromise agreement, such as demilitarizing Juba and giving executive powers to opposition in Jonglei, Unity and Upper Nile states. For VOA News, I am Philip Thonaleu in Juba.
The South Sudan government says it is disappointed because government officials were left out of a meeting in Ethiopia this week with U.S. President Barack Obama to discuss the ongoing conflict in South Sudan. Mr. Obama met with leaders of the IGAD countries and African Union officials. South Sudan Foreign Minister Barnaba Marial Benjamin says his country will send a petition today to the African Union and IGAD for breaching protocol by refusing to invite his government to the meeting. He tells VOA's Peter Clotty the international community appears not to be willing to listen to the concession his government has already offered.
While we appreciate and welcome the move of President Obama to try and help in the resolution of the conflict in South Sudan, we appreciate their contribution. At the regional meeting, which was said to be held in the name of IGAD and African Union, the Republic of South Sudan, being a member of IGAD and a member of the African Union, was not invited. And I think that is very disappointing on the part of IGAD chairperson as well as the African Union, because this republic should have been invited. If you talk about the issue of South Sudan, that you want to bring peace, and you don't invite the leadership of that country, then that is a difficulty for even peace process to proceed sort of normally.
So when do you plan, when does your government plan to officially present a petition of your disappointment, as you put it?
The government will do this within the next 24 hours, definitely. We will write officially to the chairperson of IGAD, and the chair of IGAD now is the Democratic Republic of Ethiopia. So I will send the protest to the Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Federal Republic of Ethiopia. I'm sure they could have advised President Obama that there is a protocol involved in this, and that is President Salva Kiir Mayardit is an elected president of the Republic of South Sudan by the people of South Sudan. And if you are to talk about South Sudan and you don't invite the sovereign authority of that country, it is really very disappointing.
The international community seemed to have expressed concern about their disappointment on the current crisis or the current conflict in the country, especially when they said South Sudan had so much goodwill from the international community and from everywhere else when you gained independence from Sudan.
Actually, we are very thankful and appreciate the goodwill from the international community. But what is fortunate further is that this international community is not listening to what the elected democratic government of the Republic of South Sudan is doing towards peace. The President Salva Kiir Mayardit and his government has made tremendous compromises in as far as the peace process is concerned from the day one of December 2013. And it seems that they are not listening to the efforts done by the government. Secondly, I think it is unfair on the side of the international community to continue with this moral equivalency between an elected leadership and a rebel movement. I think this is unfair. It actually makes it a very disappointing diplomatic sort of gesture to the people of South Sudan, who have fought so hard to get their own country.
Barnaba Marial Benjamin is South Sudan's foreign minister. He was speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty from Juba. A police officer in northern Bahr al-Ghazal state capital yesterday shot and killed three men and his wife, who he believed were all involved in an affair. Authorities say the officer then turned the gun on himself. The officer, identified by authorities as Sergeant Major Luka Lual Thiap, initially shot two male neighbors aged between 18 and 22 and a 45-year-old woman believed to be his wife at the Mapel residential area of Awil town Monday night. He then fled the scene and hid before returning and shot another neighbor who he had found with his wife in their house, according to eyewitness. Some neighbors told the police that Thiap's wife had allegedly committed adultery with the young man. Commissioner of Police Deng told reporters in Awil yesterday that the incident is unfortunate. He says the police had no choice but to kill Sergeant Lual after concluding he was out of control and would not submit to arrest. Speaking in Arabic, he says he was working in Wanjok immigration office. He had the gun with him and about 20 bullets, which he did not hand over when he came. 2 days ago, his wife delivered and bought some sweets. He even came with some sweets in my office here, and he's a very calm guy, and now feeling sorry of what happened to him. He had sweets and distributed to people celebrating the birth of their child. When he went back home, some people told him that the child he was celebrating his birth belongs to some youth residing nearby his home. That youth are accused of being the ones giving his wife a child. We are still investigating the source of the information, including his wife. Speaking in Arabic, the commissioner of court says Sergeant Lual had a gun loaded with 20 bullets, which he refused to hand over to authorities. A court says 2 days ago, his wife delivered a child, and after that, he came to the neighbors and became violent and told his wife he was unfaithful with the two young men near the house. He said authorities are investigating those reports. Commissioner Accord also said that a friend of the shooter is still being sought for questioning, but was not suspected of being involved in the incident. Accord adds that the person they are looking for is not dangerous. Accord Deng is one of the relatives to the deceased. She says she is happy that the shooter was killed. Speaking in Arabic, Deng says her great aunt was killed. She says if the man who killed her was alive, there would be a problem. Also speaking in Arabic, a local university student, says residents have been unable to move about in town since the shooting began, but now the situation has been resolved. Deng says schools were closed yesterday morning until the gunman was killed. Authorities say the situation in Awil is under control today and security is back to normal. Abraham Agot prepared that report from Awil. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A South Sudanese promotes poultry farming in his country. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what was the strangest place you have ever been to and why?
When I came to Uganda, it was really difficult. Like, the level of education compared to us, they are, like, in primary school, we only stop at, like, P6. Why in Uganda they have P7? Like, most things are so different than us.
Oh, for all the places I've been to, I've just been fine with them. I've been around, but it's fine. Only maybe that where there was a war, people have different problems. Others are not okay. You find them lacking arms, hands, eyes, and then maybe one eye, one nose. Yeah, that was very strange.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. A new farmers association known as AfroBig Strategic Investment has started a $5,000 project in Kajokeji County. The project starts with a poultry farming specialized in broilers. VOA fellow Tito Justin has the details.
ASI is a new initiative aimed at educating South Sudanese farmers to become independent. The project is now 3 months old with nearly 500 broilers collected from the local farmers. Broilers are chickens raised only for meat. Farmers will also use the new project to learn modern agricultural practices in order to improve their production and generate more income. Christopher Kenyi has a PhD in rural development and is the founder and manager of the Farmers Association.
If I make good money, then I think I can then share my experience with conviction, hopefully successfully inspire other Africans, which is my greatest interest.
In Central Equatoria, where the project is just getting started, farmers primarily depend on crop production, neglecting other agricultural activities such as raising chickens. South Sudan typically imports most of its broilers from neighboring Uganda, Kenya, and Sudan. Most local farmers use hand tools for crop production since they do not have access to tractors or other farming machinery. Kenyi says this small-scale type of farming does not involve big tracts of land which would employ other farmhands and generate more income. Kenyi says local farmers can also be trained to do other farm activities such as poultry keeping, which does not cost much to get started and allows them to earn a living. He says poultry keeping is one of the easiest way to start farming.
It's something that almost any villager could do. They may not be able to do the ones that require a lot of technicalities, but with some very basic support, even the local chicken can be able to produce income. So that is why I'm starting with them.
Changes in commodity prices for poultry feed has a direct impact on the cost of doing business for local farmers. For instance, a significant rise in the price of corn in South Sudan has put an economic strain on Kenyi's chicken farm operation. He says 70% of his project's budget goes to feed. Despite those challenges, Kenyi has a plan to expand his farm.
I actually intend to bring a pig as well, but I have to start somewhere, so I think poultry is a good start because I feel that with poultry, I should be able to that is a reasonable cash flow so that not only can I sustain this.
Kenyi bought his chicks from local farmers in the county. He plans to buy more chicks from Uganda because he says there are not enough chicks in the county to purchase. Farmers also find it difficult to obtain vaccines for treating their chickens and turn to neighboring countries for help. Local farmer Samuel Soro is also a poultry technician.
The drugs that we administer through water. Most of the drugs, we can't find them easily in Kajukeji. Also, we have to go across the country and buy the drugs from there. Now, the main challenging part is now the issue of pigs.
Soro says now a chicken costs between 65 to 75 pounds after 3 months of keeping. He says farmers can make a lot of money from poultry farming.
They are also not able to send their children to school. Those who too know what to do are able now to raise money for themselves. They are able to go for other businesses and do many other things as well, improving their households.
As for his business plan, Kenyi says he will sell his products in Juba, the biggest market in South Sudan for buying and selling chickens. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Washington.
From Kajukeji, we move to Nairobi. Before President Obama visited Ethiopia, he was in Kenya. 3 days before the president visited Nairobi, the city announced it was going to relocate street children to rehabilitation centers in the country. The move coincided with a project to clean up the streets before the president's arrival. As Rael Ombua reports for VOA, many say there must be a better way to address the plight of Nairobi's street families.
Humphrey Mashare is on the streets in downtown Nairobi trying to direct a driver to an empty parking spot. The driver comes out and hands him 20 shillings, about 20 US cents, and Humphrey looks for another client. The 17-year-old is just one of the many street boys trying to survive in the city. He says the reason why he came to the streets is his stepfather was mistreating him, so he left home and started his life over in the streets. Like many on the streets, he has spent time in some government rehabilitation centers designed to give street kids another chance. But for many of the street kids, these centers can feel more like detention camps. He says that's the worst place you can ever go. He says you cannot stay there because boys run away all the time and they wake you up too early. After the White House confirmed U.S. President Barack Obama's visit to Kenya, the Nairobi governor announced that the county government had set aside about 16 hectares of land in Ruai, about 20 kilometers from the center of Nairobi, where it intended to settle city street families. The Kenyan government has budgeted only about $30,000 to fund rehabilitation of street families. Activists like Joyce Mudoni, a former street child herself, says life at the centers is often worse than on the streets. She says the rehabilitation centers are dirty with diseases. And she says when she was 12 years old, her body was swollen when she was there. Some private centers are offering another alternative. Francis Kinyo is a program officer at Undugu Society, an organization that deals with rescue, rehabilitation, and reintegration of street children into society. He says that private rehabilitation centers are more efficient than the government ones. At Undugu Society, they use an approach that is more comfortable for the children.
We rehabilitate them at where they are by giving them life skills on how they can manage the trauma that they have gone through and the issue they have faced in their lives.
Street families in Kenya face a myriad of problems. The government has recognized the need to help, but getting the street families the right kind of help is still a challenge. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
The International Olympic Committee begins a three-day session this week in Malaysia's Kuala Lumpur to make a decision on key issues affecting the next Olympics, including South Sudan's petition to become a member country. South Sudan in Focus reporter Ayane Bior reports from Washington.
Professional distance runner Guor Mading Makair from Pariang, South Sudan, logs about 40 kilometers or 24 miles a week as part of his training for next year's Summer Olympics in Brazil. McCare and his team of eight other South Sudanese runners have been training in Iten, Kenya since December, where he juggles a workout of endurance and muscle training while sticking to a strict diet of rice, vegetables, and ugali. Yesterday, the IOC Executive Board recommended South Sudan's admission into the Olympics, but a final decision is not expected until Sunday. McCare is not sure he can wait that long.
I think my excitement is going to be more after I hear finally South Sudan is the actual member. For now, I'm just trying to be calm and wait, and I'm very hopeful that we will get the membership after this meeting.
McCare gained international recognition in 2012 when he ran independently under the Olympic flag in the London Olympics. South Sudan was not recognized at the time by the IOC, and McCare refused to run under Sudan's flag. In January, McCare was suspended by the South Sudan Athletic Federation, who represents him, after a disagreement over his training stipend. But he says that disagreement has been resolved, and they are now working together to represent South Sudan. He believes his country has the potential to make its mark at the Olympics.
I believe South Sudan is a powerhouse of athletics, and it has the talent, the best of the talented youth boys and girls across the country the world have ever produced.
Mike Tyerson is a professor at Penn State University. He's also an expert on the history of modern sports. He says the IOC's decision could stir feelings of nationalism among South Sudan's different ethnic communities, as well as transform South Sudan's image of a war-torn country.
Small nation like South Sudan, desperate for a medal and desperate for international recognition, you could see a huge rallying around. First of all, if they're able to get an Olympic team and be recognized by the International Olympic Committee.
But Dyerson warns there are a number of reasons why the IOC may not recognize South Sudan. First, he says, other nations could oppose South Sudan's recognition. Secondly, he says the IOC may frown on the country's 19-month-long conflict.
Nations in conflict, you know, larger nations that don't want smaller nations to split off, contests over flags and sovereignty have historically been problems for the International Olympic Committee. The fact that South Sudan is engaged in a civil war will certainly make the issue much more complex.
On top of that, McCare says he and other South Sudanese athletes are running into problems during their training in Kenya.
They don't have a good bed, places sleeping, because they don't have bed. There's no financial. They don't have training shoes. They don't have training gear. All of them. They don't even have a single something uniform, say South Sudan underneath. And there is not enough food for them.
But McCare says all of that could change if the IOC allows South Sudan in. It would mean the athletes would have more opportunities for scholarships and sponsors would step forward to support the team. But until that happens, it's a struggle.
It's affecting me mentally. It's affecting the athletes physically because of no training shoes. And training shoes is the number one thing for the athletes. And if the athletes don't have training shoes, don't have good food to eat, then training is meaningless, and most likely they will be highly vulnerable to injury. And that is what our athletes are going to face.
But if South Sudan is accepted, McCare says it could help reduce the ethnic division in his country and allow athletes to be role models.
His sport can change our life. His sport can change you to become a successful person. It's a way of showing the youth a different route instead of our mind being in a war all the time. And that is the thing. So having someone to go to the Olympic, that's going to be the opening door for the youth.
Makair says becoming a professional athlete has changed his life for the better. He says his passion is inspiring young South Sudanese to support themselves through sport. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of our top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. SPLM party leaders met today in Juba to study the new IGAD Plus proposed peace agreement and to form committees to deal with three main issues. The three committees have 48 hours to report back to party leaders. Last Friday, IGAD Plus, a group of heavyweight international powers including the United Nations, the African Union, China, and the United States, released their compromise peace plan. It sets an August 17th deadline for the government and opposition to reach a deal. SPLM party executives, other top officials, and lawmakers met for about 3 hours today. South Sudan Information Minister and senior SPLM official Michael McQuay says the committees are focusing on governance, economic issues, and security arrangements after a permanent ceasefire is reached. South Sudanese top officials are disappointed they were left out of a meeting in Ethiopia earlier this week with U.S. President Barack Obama to discuss South Sudan's crisis. Mr. Obama met with regional leaders, African Union officials, and others. South Sudan Foreign Minister Barnaba Mariel Benjamin says his country is sending a petition today to the AU and IGAD, complaining that there was a breach of protocol by failing to invite his government to the meeting. He says apparently the international community is not interested in the concessions his government has already offered to IGAD and the rebel negotiators. And finally, more than 40 people have died from cholera cases since South Sudanese health officials declared an outbreak in several locations, including the capital, earlier this year. Drinking clean water is a challenge for many citizens in Juba and elsewhere. As of July 27th, 42 people have died, and a total of 1,399 cholera cases have been reported in Juba and Bor, according to the World Health Organization. 41 of the 42 deaths were from seven Payams in Juba. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, Carol. And that brings us to the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Vulindela by Brenda Fassie.
Fez, 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 fez
We've been listening to Brenda Fassie with the song Vulindela. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Hey.